speak.
Good morning. My name is John Budlong, and I represent the appellant, who is Nina Martin, individually and as guardian for her two autistic sons, Thaddeus and Russell, and the daughter Jane Martin. And what we are asking the court to do today is to reverse the summary judgment dismissals of the claims against the two defendants, the Fletcher entities, and also General Construction Company. And the reason we're here is that the Fletcher defendants, which is also Wright Schuchert Harbert, fabricated a crush point in a tissue production machine and did not have an accessible kill switch for that machine. And the father and the husband, Don Martin, was killed on August 13, 2004, while he was working on that machine in the crush point. And we have two grounds for liability in this case. The first ground is common law negligence under the Garza versus McCain case, which we have cited to you, which is basically the same thing where a person was injured on a conveyor belt in a crush point without an accessible kill switch, and the court said that that stated a common law negligence claim. And the other basis is a product liability claim on grounds that Wright Schuchert Harbor and its successor, Fletcher, was the manufacturer of the crush point, which was the relevant product which killed Mr. Martin. Now, I'd like to start first with what the trial court did that was correct, and then get to the errors and what was correct.
Well, you don't have much time, and assuming there is liability, the court dismissed based on statute of limitations, as I understand it.
Statute of limitations and contract grounds, correct.
So what's your argument as to why the court erred in dismissing on statute of limitation grounds?
Statute of limitation grounds, that pertains to the Fletcher entities.
Yes.
And there's basically two real reasons. The first one is there wasn't a change in the party. We sued the right party. We sued Wright Schuchert Harbor, who manufactured the crush point. Wright Schuchert Harbor is Fletcher General. It is FCCNA, who is the current defendant. There was never a change in the party, so the case was timely as to them. The second reason why, and this is on exhibits three and four that we provided just our excerpts from the record, but basically, even if they weren't the same party, Mr. Grace, who is General Construction's lawyer, put them on notice within the statute of limitations period. And there's absolutely no dispute about that. He sent that letter to them, tendered our complaint to the Fletcher entities, and the trial judge is just simply wrong on the facts. She says they didn't do it. It's right there. And so that is the reason on the statute of limitations. Those are the two main ones. You can argue Citus versus Brody Dorman and those more abstract issues, but factually, we got the right party, and they got notice. And so, and their arguments are, well, we're not the same. If you look at Exhibit 2, their own documents, they are the same. And Exhibit 4, they admit that they're the same entity, that they're successors. So we're right factually on that. We're on time, Your Honor.
All right. And then as to your arguments related to the trial court's decision to dismiss the claims against General.
Yes. And that's Exhibit 1 that I have given to you. And basically what that argument is, Your Honor, is that they assumed the tort liabilities.
General assumed.
Wright Schuchert Harbor, Fletcher General, they assumed those liabilities. And they're saying these are, and he, here are the liabilities they assumed. Tort liabilities incurred after July 1996. There's no question this was a tort liability incurred in 2004, which was after 1996. So they assumed it. They're arguing, oh, no, this is excluded liabilities, but the problem with that argument is that if they're assumed liabilities under the contract, they're not excluded liabilities. So once they're assumed, you don't even consider if they're excluded, and they are assumed. And they also argue, well, there was an alteration in the contract or something to that effect, or it's only definitions. Your Honor, we have provided the latest document, which is the October 17, 1996 Assumption of Liabilities Memorandum that Mr. Urban, who owned General and was the boss of Fletcher General, signed. And he specifically assumed those liabilities, and here's why he did it. He did it because they said if they're old liabilities that are insured by the Fletcher entities, those aren't assumed. But any future liabilities which we, General, are going to be insured for under our occurrence policies, that will come under our insurance and we'll cover them in the future. And so that was the deal. He's on both sides of the transaction. Bogle and Gates wrote it. I know it's a complicated document, but it's clear that's what the intent was, and we're right on those issues.
So your argument is that they allocated the risk for future tort events based on the availability of insurance?
Yes, because it says specifically in there, Your Honor, that it pertains to insured there's a reference.
It's an exclusion for insurance.
For insurance, that's right. And that's exactly what they did. And they knew exactly what they were doing. And that's what the contract says. And they said it several times. Does the court have any question on statute of repose?
No.
All right. Thank you.
You'll have 2 minutes. Is there going to be a division of time on your side of the fence?
Yes, Your Honor. I represent General Construction, and we've agreed to reserve at this time 2 minutes. I think it's something we'll address.
Okay, you have 10 minutes. You're each going to argue now, and you're going to have to tell me how you're dividing up the 10 minutes.
8 to General, 2 to Fletcher, unless they concede, which they may. So I'll just say 8 and 2 at this point.
So if we are hard on you, you won't get 2, or you will get 2?
It's not my election. It's their time to have, if they wish, 2 minutes. So good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Michael Grace for General Construction. Briefly, with respect to the successor liability issue, because that is the primary issue addressed by Mr. Budlong, he only addresses part of what the agreement says. And the agreement is the 1996 agreement, which has definitions and then it has operative language. The definitions define what is an excluded liability and define what is an assumed liability. However, those definitions do not self-implement. They don't say who is assuming what and who or which liabilities are excluded, whoever is taking which liabilities. To do that, one must look to Article 2 of the agreement. And this is cited, or this is included as an appendix to the appellant's brief. It's CP 2485. And Article 2.01, it states, the assumption by General of all of the assumed liabilities to which seller was subject as of the organization date. The organization date is defined in that same paragraph as October 10th, 1996. And then later in that same paragraph, it says, General shall assume from seller all additional assumed liabilities to which seller becomes subject between the organization date and the closing date. Closing date was also later that month. subject to. And that's what Judge Kress focused on in the summary judgment. The claimants could not have been subject to liability for Mr. Martin's death in 1996 when it hadn't occurred.
What about Mr. Budlong's argument that the intent of the parties was to allocate risk based on occurrence policies?
It only with respect to how it's written in the definitions, because when one looks to the definition of excluded liability, it also does reference insurance, but it states, excuse me, to the right section, all obligations or liabilities of the business arising with respect to any acts, actions, omissions, or events occurring prior to July 1, 1996. And again, acts, actions, or omissions here would be those that were allegedly committed in 1980 or 81. But again, one must be subject to, in 1996, the liability. Mr. Martin hadn't died. I would like to turn to the statute of repose argument, which the trial court denied to grant summary judgment on, because I think it is.
If you're going to address that, you might at the same time explain why we would consider the question, since we don't normally consider a denial of a summary judgment on appellate review.
Because as a matter of law, all the facts are before the court to grant that summary judgment.
And how would we distinguish those cases that say that we don't review the denial of summary judgment? And they're not cited by Mr. Budlong in his briefing, but they're out there.
We're aware of them.
I understand. Well, if the court doesn't do it, I would urge at this time to keep in mind the reasons. Put it this way.
If we don't do it, then your entire argument has just been made.
Time is better served on the success or liability issue. Fair enough. Understood, Your Honor. There can only be one successor here. If, to the extent Mr. Budlong is correct, when he said in his opening argument, we have the party, the Fletcher entity to which General tendered the claim, which he is now pursuing also, if any, that's the party. Keep in mind what happened here, and it's in the record, what happened after the 1996 agreement was executed. The Fletcher entities did not cease to exist. Fletcher continued as a viable operation. They wished to divest themselves locally of their business interests, but they continued to exist and
do
business.
Who acquired assets in 1996?
In 1996, assets were acquired by GC Investment Company and set up as a general construction company. And
if we're looking at successors, the fact that the seller continued to exist wouldn't really answer the question, would it?
Yes, it does. To the extent that general successor liability law states that the liabilities are only assumed if one expressly takes on the liabilities by contract. And the exception in the arms...
That's the question here, though, not that Fletcher continued to exist. The question is, what does this contract mean?
What the contract means is general...
Do you agree with that proposition?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
The issue before us is the interpretation of the contract the parties executed in 1996.
Yes, and the... My intent.
It doesn't matter a whit that Fletcher continued on afterwards. It's what the parties said on this piece of paper.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, because the parties' actions can demonstrate what was intended in the contract. And following execution of that agreement.
Only if it's ambiguous.
Fair enough.
Well, so is it ambiguous?
No, it's not.
Well, then we wouldn't look at that.
Fair enough. What the contract says, Your Honor, is that general acquired the assets, and to the extent that any assumed liabilities were taken on, again, it was the only assumed liabilities to which the seller was subject as of 1996. And the reason is because there was this period which the agreement was initially entered into in July of 1996. At that point, the parties were going through their due diligence, figuring out what was in the books, what was out there, what needed to be included in the agreement. So there was this period from July of 1996 through October of 1996, which was the closing date of the agreement, where the parties were allocating liabilities. And to the extent it was covered by insurance prior to that time, that would be an excluded liability and picked up by the seller's insurance. During that interim period, when General was essentially beginning operation of the business, but prior to that time where they said on the closing date going forward,
they took possession before closing?
They began running parts of the operation, management did.
So the answer is yes.
Yes. And during that interim period, the period between July and the closing date, General did agree to assume liabilities, or the purchasers agreed that General would assume the liabilities. But
for its operations.
For its operations. But one had to be subject to that liability. Mr. Martin hadn't died. Therefore, the company couldn't be subject to that liability going forward.
Right. You want to invade the 2 minutes?
Take your 2 minutes. It's your call.
Well, you're going to elect, and then we'll let you know the answer to that question.
If this is the key issue before the court, I'm happy to concede 2 minutes.
Do you have any questions?
No.
If we don't have any questions, you don't want any of the 2 minutes?
That's correct.
All right. We won't ask any questions, and you can have the last.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. So, Mr. Martin hadn't died. The company wasn't subject to the liability in 1996. That's what Judge Kress focused upon, and that is the way the contract is to be read. Going forward, after that time, the liabilities were retained by the seller that continued to exist. There is no evidence that there was anything going on to go outside the general law of successor liability set forth in the Armstrong case. There's no reason to adopt a product line exception here. This is not a product. This is a licensed construction contractor, Wright Schuchart Harbor.
So there was no argument made there was a failure to warn based on events that occurred between 96 and 04?
No. There was originally arguments.
As I understand it, your folks acquired this in 96.
Certain assets General acquired
in
96.
Mr. Martin wasn't injured until 04, or killed until 04.
Correct.
And there was no theory argued to the trial court about a failure to warn or something else based on knowledge acquired between 96 and 04.
There originally was, I believe, with respect to Dematic, the party that manufactured the conveyor.
With respect to
General, there were allegations made that General or some other entity performed modifications to the equipment or did something after the original installation. General brought a summary judgment to the trial court and moved for dismissal of all those theories, stating that there is no evidence. This was conceded. This was conceded. There is no basis to allege anything, any basis for liability against General post-1980-81 installation.
So liability was based on conduct that occurred in 1981.
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.